Continue. The way we go about the pace we're taking now will also determine the time we finish this our meeting. But I'm not saying that to encourage us compromise the issue. No. I am merely saying that it should be straightforward. I know that we're learning a lot during this process, but at the same time, we consider the time issue. Unabisa?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members. Let's go to section 59, the penalties. The next slide after, I think it's the last slide on prohibited practices. Dealing with penalties. So it's clause 32 on the bill, section 59 on the principal act. Clause 32 on the bill. So this the proposed amendments are as follows: the removal of the yellow card. The bill removes the so-called yellow card provision for rule of reason offences and provides for guidelines to be published by the Commission. Tougher penalties and repeat offenders. The bill provides for a higher penalties for repeat offences up to a maximum of 25% of annual turnover. The proposed section 59.3a, penalties for controlling companies. The bill provides the tribunal with the power to extend the penalties to companies who control a respondent firm if they knew or reasonably ought to have known about the offence, and introduces joint and several liability. On aggravating factors, the impact on small and medium businesses or black-owned businesses may result in higher penalties. Mitigating factors. If the firm is not previously guilty or if the offense was not covered by guidelines, this may be taken into account when determining the appropriate penalty. Then prescription. Section 67, the proposed section 67 says that the amendment clarifies the wording of the section so that firms cannot argue that the Commission is unable to investigate the matter because it has prescribed. So section 59, amendment of section 59, date is clause 32. So the main issue there was the removal of the yellow card. Some of the submissions were pro the removal of the yellow card, and some of them did not agree with the removal of the yellow card, and some were also concerned about the tougher penalty, the 25% annual turnover. So we need to look at that. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam. We're looking at section 59.
Section 59.
Okay.
Clause 32 on the bill. Section 59 on the... Section 59 of the Principal Act, Clause 32 of the bill.
Okay. Okay, can we then consider the engage on the section 59 penalties? So we need to. It is amended by removing those clauses. Anyone? Dr.
Kaido? Chair, I would object to the 25% of turnover. I think that's far too high and could potentially cripple firms. I also object to the removal of the yellow card, and I thought that there was an input from BUSA, if I'm not mistaken, that was quite good, saying, I forget how they phrased it, but it was along the lines of it's only when a prohibited practice had been deemed to be such by the competition tribunal that we should take that into consideration in the penalty regime.
So what are you saying in relation to the purpose of this particular meeting?
I'm just saying that I object to those two clauses.
Not for you to object right now, it's for you to recommend it if you would want this to be to form part of the issues taken to the minister for response.
Yeah, I'd like to hear the minister.
The objection can
objections.
Come later on when we deal with those close to close.
Well, I should imagine that one could object at any time one likes, but I would just like to hear the minister's response to those two specific objections.
Okay, you want him to explain what?
I want him to answer the case put by Boothler that you should keep the yellow card and only do away with it once the competition tribunal has found in respect of a prohibited practice, because I think that's a positive suggestion, and I would like to know whether he would be prepared to entertain it.
Okay. Dr. Kaido's proposal, what are we saying, members? And that is then.
Thank you very much. What we have observed from the bulk of the submission that we received here is that many stakeholders are helping the amendment in the sense that there has always been this public outcry that the current system where companies are fined here, they're fined there and so on, the view is that it has not been acting as a deterrent to the company. That is why there's been repeat offenders and so on. So the understanding that we get from the bulk of the commission is that the 25% of the turnover fine charges is not going to happen if people don't break the law. So it's a deterrent to say don't go in that space from 10 to 25. We think in terms of the submissions, that is reasonable. I don't think that is something that we want to clarify, but if there are members who feel that the minister should explain, well, we cannot stop it. But that is not how the majority of the submissions feel. They feel, you know, the fines that have been going on have been like a slap in the wrist. they want something that can shape people, ensure that people stray on, stay on the straight and narrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Sir. Any other? Thank you, Sir. I also agree with this yellow card removal. Based on one thing, if you will hear what the submissions of that were sent in, you could understand that this was used, they abused the yellow card. They will know that they will just, it will say the first time, but they know that they can also fight it for that. So they know, okay, it can happen, then fight it for 10 million, the 10 million, it's nothing. So once this is removed, it will make people not to abuse the yellow card system. That's why it was on. And also the 25%, not going to start already in 25. It's talking about first time, second time, and everything. So people will know, and it's very good that it should be on their annual turnover, so that they should know that whatever they got, it will be taken from them. So for me, it's also making sure that there's, because at this moment they abuse this yellow card in such a way that they also close out SMMP into the whole thing. So this one is correct. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Mama. Can we hear if there are any, there'll be any implications, if there's implications to the market, if there's yellow card? Or let me focus on the 25%. Is there any danger perhaps? I'm not sure whether I'm asking the right question, but I wanted to ask the question in relation to whether there's something that prohibits is not the right word, something that would perhaps make the investors a bit shaky when the government says, no, you've been operating, you've been getting away with the murder, now we are tightening our screws so that you don't do this thing, you don't practice things that are not supposed to be practiced within the market, that will hinder competition. That, let me hear from you, especially the lawyers. Is there any other thing that, the legal people, is there any other thing that might put us in a different or in a difficult situation as government? Not us, but the government. That's a deliberate question. I'm asking legal people now. Can we be litigated on this? Can they? That is the executive and the entities that are responsible for implementing. If they were to implement the 25%, or will that see companies going down?
Take a first step and record it. I don't think the issue of the amount or the fine has any legal implications that would be challenged on it, the amount itself. And I think the arguments raised by business is that in the event someone is found guilty, maybe the company can go close. That's the argument that they're raising with the business people. But on the legality itself or the fine, I don't think it is challengeable, because sentences are about mitigating and aggravating sentence. When you're found guilty, you either mitigate that, I'm sorry, please, I won't do it again, the sentence might be lower, or that the circumstance that you transgress the law is such that it is aggravating that you should be fined 25%, basically, because I think the way the legislation It's not that definitely that you're going to get 25%. It will be instances where there's serious aggravation or serious falsification that you approve 25%. So sentencing, for me, I don't think there's a question of legality to that.
It will affect profits too. Hopefully, Chair, it will deter, because that was the whole point. The committee, I remember, used to raise the question that what happens to repeat offenders, because that is not catered for in the law. Everybody is charged a maximum of 10%, whether you're a repeat offender or not. So, but the question is, how did we arrive at 25%? And do we really feel that, is it more effective than 50% or 35% or 20%?
The law doesn't provide, so we work according to the law. And we would, as much as we'd want to do that, but the law currently does not provide. So all of them saw the need of really, especially for second-time offenders, to get high penalties. But they did not have a mechanism to assist them to come to that particular determination. Now, the issue now might be, is the 25% the ideal or not? If yes, how was it arrived at? What is the criteria used to come to? Obviously, it is a negotiated settlement, a negotiated thing, outcome, but the fact of the matter is we have to be sure of what we're talking about. The minister did respond, just that I can't recall what was the response, unless any of the members do assist. But is there any harm in asking the minister to clarify that? I'm asking members now. There's no harm. Let's apply our minds, colleagues. Say, Uti, Osamil. Okay. That is clear.
Well, Chair, if one of us feels very strong that they want to still ask the minister, I don't think we can stand in their way. But as a collective, I think logic tells us that we are in a position to can understand that if you move away from 10 to 25, you don't have to be a mathematician or an economist. From 10 to 25, 10 did not work. you second offense, this time now, if you continue with what you are doing, break the law, now we're going to take 25% of what you do, you make in a year. It's supposed to scare you away from doing wrong things. Now, if we
you
want...
Do that even at home with your kids.
Pardon?
I'm saying you do that with your kids.
Yeah, if you let them...
Yes, but you try not to kill your kids off in the process. So the danger of the 25% is that you may actually lead to a business closing.
No, but
I'm still on the floor.
So, yes, so it's, you must bring that to me, on me, and the and
the one more. Oh, I'm sorry, Chairperson. No, Chair, we are saying, let us look at the first principle.
Mm-hmm.
The first principle is to say to people who are in business that we are happy when they employ our people and they make profits in that process. That is what we want. But if they break the law and they break it continually, they must understand that we are not going to be happy about it. We are a South African, we are South Africa, we are part of the continent. There are so many negative things that are said about our continent, as in regards to issues of corruption, bad practices, and so on. So we need to send a signal, even to investors themselves. They must understand that they are coming into a very, very clean terrain, or ideally, we want to create a very clean terrain so that people understand that if they go into that space, they are going to behave. That is all. If they don't break the law, they won't have to face that. And also, the last thing is that this does not happen for the first offenders, Chairperson. This is very important to emphasize. It happens for repeat offenders. Repeat offenders. And finally, what must be taken into consideration? We must not only look at these offenders in isolation of the people who are at the lower ranks of the economic ladder. What does it do to them? Already they are on the receiving end, already they can't compete. When people break the law, it hits them twice, 10 times as much. So what we are trying to do is to make sure that the playing field is level so that people can come in and participate.
And let me, I think I was going to say, really, let's look at the other way around. Instead of questioning the 25%, let's look at what if the 25% was not there, what does that do to our economy? If we complain that it kills the economy, it kills the business. If it's not there, what does it do to our economy? What does it do to our people? We should also be asking that those questions. Currently, we have a situation where, as described by Dr. Claire, where the very same, I mean, if you collude, what should you do? What implications does that have on our people, on the economy, on the smaller firms? We should be asking ourselves those questions. And then, is the intention to kill? No. In the first place, why are we coming with that if there was a good behavior? There wasn't going to be a need. But experience has taught the competition authorities that in this situation, you have to regulate. Otherwise, we are not going to correct. If you leave the market to correct itself, it's not going to do that. It's proven. So I think it's something that we need to do. But still, the question is the punishment correct? Is it too heavy? But my issue here is if you consider it too heavy, why then do you put your head in it in the first place? Because this is meant to deter you from doing that. But if you see that you are getting into a hole, but you still want to continue getting into a hole yourself, nobody can force you to jump into a hole. You're putting yourself into a hole. At the same time, you want to complain that, no, you can't put me in the hole, whereas it's yourself who's putting yourself in the hole. All I can do is just to look at you or to help you come out of the hole by punishing you. So that next time when you see a hole, you don't get into it. So this is my understanding of the whole thing. Because if you are not regulated, you'll continue to do things that are not permissible. That's why I'm pleading that we look at it there, both ways. Dr. Kado?
Chair, sure, we need to look at it two ways, but we need to find the right balance between deterrence and destruction. So I don't think anybody's arguing that we shouldn't have a penalty regime. I mean, clearly companies who are repeat offenders need to be punished in such a way that definitively deters them from engaging in the same behavior over and over again. But we don't want to impose such an extreme penalty, such as 25% of turnover, which might very well lead to the destruction of a business. Is it not possible to explore other options open to us, such as, for example, the imposition of a 25% penalty on profits? I mean, these are just things which I think we as a collective should give thought to.
I would also say, okay.
One question. Why do you repeat the offense if you know that it is hitting you hard?
Exactly, because it's not like it's for the first time. You do something, you are said 10%, of course. And then you repeat it because that 10% meant nothing to you. You have a lot of money. You feel, oh, I can always buy out. That's the main issue. The main issue is not to kill. Otherwise, government wouldn't be giving out the incentives on anything if it wants to kill. The issue here is when you do wrong, yes, government is not going to negotiate with you. You have to pay for the wrong things that you are doing. Even if it means closure, close, because you are not prepared to do right. This is the message that I'm getting out of this thing. And it's a very serious thing. And if there are people who feel that this is nothing. Go to 2010 cartel investigations report by the competition authorities. And then go to what, for instance, Netherlands did. And then you'll realize that this is a serious matter. So it is something that we need to take into consideration. And I think, really, Dr. Kado, yes, there's nothing more than what we're explaining that the minister can explain, except to explain how he came to the 25%. That's all. Patrick? Mr. Atkinson?
Thanks, Patrick. That's fine. I don't mind if you call me Patrick. It's no problem. Just in line with that 25%, you know, I understand that it is for repeat offence and everything, but as Dr. Carter said, if it means the destruction of a business, it's not normally some fat capitalist that gets thrown out of business. It's normally thousands of workers as well. So you're actually destroying the livelihoods of a lot of people, many of whom are not fat and rich, basically. But actually, this might be their one opportunity, the job. So I think one needs to think very carefully about being a little bit too gung-ho about destroying companies, because at the end of the day, yes, you might be destroying some people's capital, but generally it's not them. There are normally a lot more people down there, down the chain, who rely on that to feed their families and everything as well. So I think we really should bear that in mind.
Yes, let's discuss this politics of the whole thing. It's very important that we discuss it. Ma'am, follow?
Chair, when you say we need to be looking at the effect, the ripple effect that we'll be having on workers, I'm also seconding what Ntate Cele is saying. Why do you start with it knowing that it's going to affect a lot of people? Unless you are saying we need to leave it at it so that people can be exploited, because if we have to be fair, there's a lot of exploitation. You come into the country, or you are international, or you are South African, at the end of the day, you are exploiting the country on its own, you exploit the people, and we must leave and say, no, that is correct. Something is not correct here. And then you're talking about that the 25% should be for the profit. No. Companies can hide and then leave a little bit of profit, and the rest it is hiding in between. It must be on the annual turnover. So that at the end of the day, you know what needs to happen. It cannot be that now companies will fall, business will fall. They will be fall because of your carelessness. You did not follow, you did not adhere to the law of the country. And we must leave it as it is to say, because you run a business, you can run loose. Everybody needs to follow the law of the country, and that's it.
The other way to look at this matter is to go back to the founding principle of our democratic dispensation. Democracy becomes democracy because of the majority of the people. If people participate in your polity, which is your political system, you are guaranteed that your system will flourish. Now, ordinary people who make democracy to work, if they are found to have stolen a loaf of bread, they are sentenced to something like 8 to 10 years. For a loaf of bread, this person is hungry, they don't steal money or anything, just a loaf of bread at the supermarket there. They go away for a very long time, and the judge and the magistrate, they explain that we are sending you away, you are a first offender, yes, but we want this to act as a deterrent. So if ordinary people have to face that type of a situation, hungry people, they go to jail because they are hungry, they steal a loaf of bread, why should we be debating this matter? Especially as we're looking at the second offender, we're not saying in the beginning. In fact, in due course, we must be saying, even for first offenders, the ideal situation is that even for first offenders, people should not be breaking the law, you know, because they want to make super profit. We should not be saying that. But now, you know, because we don't want to be seen to be unreasonable and so on, we say at least the second offender, which is well understandable. So I think we need to send a strong message to everyone out there that we want to start on a clean slate. We want people to understand that we're not a banana state. You don't come here and mess around. If you mess around, then we're going to have to act against you. But if you stick to the straight and narrow, you are allowed to come here and make millions for yourself. You don't have a problem with that. So I'm saying, let us look at what happens when ordinary people are caught having stolen food in the supermarket. What happens to them?
Mate, thanks, Dr. Ziani. I think this was all clarified, and we'll allow the state to advise
on it. I hope I don't muddy it, Chair. But just to clarify, Chair, that the 25% is the maximum that the tribunal can impose. So it's not it's not bound by that amount at the beginning. So it's the maximum amount that they will apply. And subsection 3 talks of the factors that they will need to consider in determining that sentence. And in the scenario of criminal offences, Chairperson, the courts have spoken about maximum sentences. You know, they have said the legislature views maximum sentences to indicate or to signpost to the courts their displeasure at certain offences. You know, so it's to show the courts that the legislature is how much you are displeased with this kind of conduct, you know, by indicating the maximum amount, so that when a court imposes the sentence, it says, look, this is how seriously the legislature views this. So there's legal certainty. People know that this conduct is wrong, and if we engage in it, this is the maximum that will be applied to us. You know, so there's legal certainty, and you go into it with eyes wide open. So that's my addition to it.
Thank you so much. I think that also further clarifies. Actually, I would say 40%, even 50%, to kill even worse, because then you're giving the courts a broader scope to act. Because yes, you work hard, very hard for that money. And if you think of just losing it like that, you must really think twice if you have to involve yourself in any activity that's not permissible. So I think we agree that, and we appreciate the fact that it's maximum. It's not that they might even say, they can even say 12%. 15%, depending on the magnanimity of the case. I think that's exactly what we're talking about now. Because we can call the minister and end up saying 30% of the tip. Okay. Let's call the minister to come in and explain just the rationale behind the 25%. Huh? Do we call him? There's nothing wrong in calling him to explain that. Okay. Next, Nwabisa.
We are now moving on to the next section, Chief. We are moving on to focus area number 2, overview of the bill on structure of markets and competition in relation to market inquiry. That is section 43 of the Principal Act.
Sorry, Robinson, can I just disturb you a bit?
Yes.
There was an issue around the holding company. Whether you can also find that. Remember that it's not just about the subsidiaries, because sometimes we limit it to subsidiaries. The holding company issue, come in.
No, I just mentioned that one of the issues raised about the penalty.
You're welcome, Bapigini.
No, I was just saying to the chair, one of the things that was raised during the submission was the extending of liability to holding companies, not only the company that was transgressing. There were people who were for and there were people who were against, and I thought the committee must just express its view on it, on the matter. There's nothing wrong with it, but I'm just saying just the committee express its view where it understands it.
Thanks for reminding us. I think you heard from, I think it was Vodacom was very vocal on that one. Booster was very vocal on that one. I also heard Law Society was very vocal on that. I don't know about myself. So can we, do you want to reflect on that a bit? Or we stand by what is there? get it there.
I think, Chair, the particular scenario that we are being reminded about actually strengthens the principle itself. This is what government is trying to explain to the business community out there. That if you collude, you do wrong things, you undermine small businesses and so on, you must understand that when we catch up with you, we'll not only look at the one subsidiary here and so on, we'll look at the entire company. So that the company owners, they need to internalize this and realize how serious it is, and then stay away from doing wrong. We think it is a necessary addition.
Thanks, Dr. Kado.
I is not included in that we. I agree with the submission by the Law Society that it's too broadly drafted as it stands, 59.3AA, in that it would be better, as per their suggestion, to show that the controlling firm has actively directed the conduct of the respondent in some way. So you need to prove a link. You need to show that the controlling firm has actually done something to influence the conduct of the respondent. In the way that it's currently drafted, it's a kind of catch-all. It's not specific enough. It doesn't insist that there be a definitive proof of misconduct.
So is the firm, or is it the complainant that needs to prove?
So there needs to be a better link between the two. You need to be able to demonstrate that the controlling firm has influenced the implicated firm's behavior in some way.
To what extent our legal people does the provision earlier on, that spoke of, I know it was under, what were we dealing with then? Of the guidelines? The guidelines related to 79, section 79. To what extent does that cover this particular provision? In terms of who should provide what. I think I remember what was to do with that. Can you remind us, Novice, and perhaps maybe the legal people? Say your advice. Are you able to help us there? Because also, I think our legal provisions here should link. Even if you put a particular, let me stop explaining until I get an explanation.
I think, Chair, in relation to the guidelines, I think probably I'm asking whether there's owners from the holding company, should not the committee consider that the holding company must be the one who
Okay, the reverse owners provisions are not applicable to this section.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think the Act allows the Commission to issue guidelines for any part of the section. So therefore, it is probably open to the Commission or the competition authorities to issue guidelines what would be a reasonable knowledge or knowing of the company that your subsidiary is messing up. So it is open for them to issue those guidelines, but the reverse bonus is not applicable to this clause.
All right. I was asking that because the way also we I would perhaps agree with the law society to some extent if that is not covered, because if this is what I'm saying, I said I did not want to give my opinion until I get the explanation. It won't matter now, it will matter when we discuss, but I'm just saying now that I would agree, because as much as we want to put a deterrent, yes. I'm sorry, I'm waiting for a call for interview. That's why I've opened my phone. My apologies for that. I should have explained it again. The reason is that I wanted this thing not to be as broad as it is also, because I feel the minister must come back to just to explain it. Because if the holding company is not made to explain itself, and therefore the person who is, or the competition authorities are the ones who are supposed to prove that you were engaged in such a thing, or you were liable because you had the knowledge of what was happening by a subsidiary, then it also doesn't, to me, serve a purpose, because it they will get away with these things, because at the end of the day, it says on the notice to the controlling firm or firms, order that the controlling firm or firms be jointly and severally liable for the payment of the administrative penalty imposed. This is not what I wanted to talk. I think it's the increase, the administrative penalty referred to where the controlling firm knew. Oh, yes. Where the controlling firm or firms knew or should reasonably have known that the respondent was engaging in the prohibited conduct. Reasonably have known. To me, it's very broad. Because if you're saying where the controlling firm or firms knew or should reasonably have known, how do you prove that? Except the firms themselves giving you information that would lead you then penalizing them on that. Because if I'm the one who is taking them, for instance, to the competition authorities, and they say to me, no, but prove that me as a holding company contributed to the situation that it is. Am I going to be able to prove? No, because I wasn't. I might be knowing that you engaged in such activities, but the fact that you must prove, then it won't work. I'm saying that I just want clarity, because that's why I want the minister to come to come to explain that particular provision. As much as I know that the Law Society is only talking of the broadness in relation to their interests, I'm not talking in terms of that. I'm talking in terms of making sure that the penalty is implemented without having to prove anything, but the very same people having to prove that really they engaged in such activity, wrong activity. I'm going to allow the state law advisor to explain, and then I'll give it to the members. But then before I do so, So I need him to explain when I leave that he plans to.
Thanks, Chair. The standard of reasonable should have known, Chairperson, it's relatively commonplace standard in or test in our legal system, Chairperson. In that, when it is used, the test that is used is to look at a person who is in the position of let's say, in this case, the controlling firm. So look at a reasonable person who is in the position of the controlling firm. What actions they would have undertaken to ensure that the conduct that is complained of doesn't take place or is prevented. So a reasonable person, let's say you are accused of a certain offense. Now, if we say you should have known, or you should have reasonably have known that you cause this harm. So we look at a person who's got the same capacity as you, who's in your same position, to say, okay, this is the reasonable person who is in your in the same position as you. So these are the reasonable steps that they would have taken to familiarize themselves with the conduct that is being made an offense. And these are the steps that they would have taken to prevent the occurrence of this. So that's how it's applied in practice. So it's a test that is applied by in our legal system.
After that explanation, do you want to add on?
Just as the test that is being used for the test that is saying, even when you are found in possession of stolen property or dealing in stolen property, if suddenly Umbulelo, who is a beggar, suddenly sells you a TV that you know that Umbulelo can never have access to a TV, as an example, and you buy this TV from Umbulelo, the court general says, but you know Mbulelo doesn't earn an income, where would he get the TV, for example? So a reasonable person in your position should not have bought a TV from Mbulelo, because Mbulelo might have received that TV in nefarious ways.
Thank you, Chair. When we talk about, when I'm looking at what Law Society is saying, it says we need to remove the what you have known. Why do we have to remove? Because I agree with what the advisor is saying, the legal, to say, in your own, I'm making a scenario, in your own company, and then you've got subsidies. Those companies are not going to exist without you knowing what is happening in those companies. Now, when there's a fault, you could have picked up that fault before, and you didn't correct. So you cannot say, I'm not liable. You are liable because those are falling under you. You are a holding company. So you know exactly who's doing what, where, when. So it cannot be taken out. It should be stayed like this. It's reasonable or to have known. And on top of that, as a holding company, you are also part of the people that know the do's and the don'ts, the rules and regulations. Why, when it comes to your subsidy, you want to say you didn't know? Because you are the one who's guiding them to say, in terms of the law, this is what is happening, this is what we are saying. So because of that, it cannot be taken out, because before, people will be saying, I didn't know, whereas they knew. So we make sure that they become part of it, so that they should know that before you can even start, they must stop it from the subsidiary company.
I think the small addition to that is that the companies that get into trouble in this regard are not the small companies. The people who commit fixed prices to all these things, they are not the small companies. They are the big companies. If they know that they've got subsidiaries and they want to make extra money on the side, what they will do, they will allow the small companies to engage in the activities, knowing that they will be exempted at the end of the day. Now, you need to construct your law in such a way that there is no space, there is no gray area. The buck stops with the controlling company. The buck stops with the controlling company. The subsidiaries, when they get this money, the profit and the what, they don't just use them. The mother company is the one that decides what happens here. Therefore, closing this space is important to make sure that everybody adheres to the law. So that piece that is included there that they should have known, I think it is important because the buck stops with the controlling company. That is our understanding. Any further discussion on this matter? I'm your acting chair again until she returns, of course. Can we proceed?
What happens in the case of a firm that's not domiciled in South Africa? Does the Act as it stands provide for that holding company in a foreign jurisdiction to be held responsible for the behavior of a subsidiary company?
Can we get a response from the legal people? Then you come in, Mamfulo. I think this question needs yourself before we come in, and then Baba Tele will also come in. Are you able to assist about the company that is somewhere?
Chair, I think that is a good question. If it's not there, let's put it in the court. They even can't, companies that are outside must be held liable, because when you do something there outside and you're a South African, they'll hold you liable. They're not going to say you're not a South, you don't come from our country. So we need to add it there, including companies outside South Africa, if it's not included, the holding company, so that we can make sure that no one runs away with money.
I need to be corrected here. My small knowledge about operations, business, and so on is that the environment is universal. We're talking here capitalism. As far as we understand, the system applies the same all over the world. These are universal practices. And they are also endorsed by your IMF, your well-being, your doing, and so on. Therefore, a controlling company should be a controlling company under any... The role of government is always very minor in terms of the free market system. But the Honorable Atkinson, they will be first.
Just asking our two lawyers in the room. Surely this is all about jurisdiction, legal jurisdiction. I mean, how can we legislate for companies living outside of our legal jurisdiction? So, just say if the controlling company is sitting in China and they've got a subsidiary company that's based here in South Africa, how could we hold a Chinese company sitting in Beijing liable for actions of a South African, of a South African subsidiary if they're sitting outside of the legal jurisdiction? Would we not be going against international law on that basis?
Chair, I'll venture to commission international law. But I think it's a question that might be the committee for international law that is to answer. I think there's nothing in the law that puts the answer as opposed to other companies international. Because I think,
for you,
point of departure, Chair, is that is to relook the question specifically and answer it properly. But looking at the rules of international law and international trade, basically, states are able to hold companies which are not within their jurisdiction if they, those companies made themselves subject to the law of that country that they're functioning in. And I do not argue that that is a definitive answer, but I think remembering my international law almost 15 years ago, that you could hold a company that is not within your jurisdiction if it has committed an offence through some subsidiary in your jurisdiction in that area. But I think if the committee does sit tomorrow, we can bring a proper definitive answer to that question.
Yeah, because surely then it would be all about enforceability. So if you've got a company sitting in Beijing, how then do you enforce your laws and your regulations against them over there? Especially if you have a government, a foreign government that might not be that interested in assisting with compliance, basically.
It's probably what you have in relation to your, when you want to extradite someone from another country and that you have no agreement with that country. That country refuses because they have no agreement with you to extradite the other person. So in the instance that you have an agreement, because usually these things, there are trade agreements that regulate these things and there are rules, what happens in cases of an infringement, So you have to look at those rules and everything that they do allow you. That's why I'm saying it will be very difficult to give an answer that says yes or no now to the committee. And I think what we would ask the committee to just give us, because I think it's an easy question, that because it has been decided somewhere, is to answer that definitively by tomorrow morning.
So just to follow up on that one again, what you might want to look at is the case of De Beers, of De Beers as it was, where they broke antitrust legislation in America because of the diamond cartel. But they couldn't enforce it against De Beers in South Africa. And that's why De Beers executives didn't go to America, because it could be enforced against them when they arrived in America. But there was no way America could enforce their restrictions against De Beers in South Africa or anyone else, because it was a foreign jurisdiction.
Yeah, before you come in, I think what you are saying now is that these are preliminary responses that we are getting now. However, our legal team will go and make more inquiries. Next time when we meet, they will give us definitive answers as to whether a company from Gai Gai overseas and so on can really then be held responsible if their subsidiary here in South Africa breaks the law and so on. We said we think that under the free market system there's universality, but let the lawyers go and determine what the correct situation is, because Mr. Atkinson there is raising a good question and is referring to a particular matter of the beer and so on. So once they have inquired, they will come back and they will get that response. Welcome back,
Thank you, and I think now we can break. We'll come back and finish off. You'll be the first to stop. Let's take a break for 5 minutes. We'll come back to the fresh tea here.
Come again? Yes, a spent 5 minutes.